Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I'm your host Corey Fleck, joined by Shad Marquitz as my co-host. And this weekend, on this weekend show, we are going to be kicking off talking a lot about inflation and then moving on in the final two segments to discuss market moves, taking kind of all these trends, especially over the last about month now, some of the new trends that have been established in some of the different sectors, including precious metals. That second half is going to be with Rick Bensignor. First half of the show with our good friend Jesse Felder, founder and editor of the Felder Report. Now, Jesse, you've been writing a lot about inflation, and rightfully so. Inflation finally has come to light and has been, I think, dictating a lot of the recent market moves, simply because you look back at the inflation data, and we're going to be focusing on U.S. inflation data. Inflation really started to take off in, let's call it, March to April of this year. In February, we had an inflation reading of 1.7%. In March, that grew to 2.6%. April, 4.2%. And just the most recent reading in October, that's 6.2%. So we have seen this big growth in inflation. We still have the Fed saying that this is going to be transitory. Nobody really knows what the time frame is for transitory, but by the time we get to next year, if we still have inflation around these levels, I think everybody's going to wake up to the fact that inflation isn't going to be going quickly back to that 2% or even under 2% level. When it comes to the inflation data that you're looking at, we cover the headline numbers, CPI, PPI, regularly. What are you looking at inside this data here, Jesse, that has you thinking inflation's going to be here for longer than the Fed wants us to believe it will be?
Well, you know, it's a good question. I think the one of the things that the Fed pointed to in arguing inflation was transitory was median CPI, and pointing out that, you know, headline inflation was going up. I'm talking about back in the spring and summer of this year. Headline inflation was going up, but it was being driven by a small number of things that were really affected by the pandemic. Prices collapsed during the pandemic and then were shooting back to kind of normal, more normal levels, you know, this year after the economy reopened and everything. And so median CPI was pretty much showing that it was a small number of things that were really driving the headline numbers higher. Median CPI fell to about, you know, 2%, you know, early this year in the spring, but it's turned higher and has been moving higher to about 3%, you know, in September and October. One of the indicators I look at is the NFIB puts out, you know, its survey of small business. This is a great leading indicator for median CPI, small business price plans. So small businesses tell this in the survey how they plan to manage pricing. And this indicator has been just screaming higher every single month, really since the, you know, the bottom of the pandemic. And it's pushing now to record highs. So if median CPI, this leads median CPI by about 10 months. You know, I have to give credit to this indicator to the folks at Nordea, and Julian Brigden, who's a friend of mine, have really highlighted this. But it's something that I think is worth paying really close attention to, because this indicator is suggesting over the next 10 months that median CPI is going to continue to push higher, well above 3%, probably to the 4-5% level next year. And if that's the case, that is absolutely plain as day evidence that inflation is much broader than just a small number of things affected by the pandemic. It's everything. Everything in the index it will be running at a 3-5% year over year rate. That to me is evidence that the transitory narrative is baloney, and the Fed, you know, and so this has important implications for the markets too, because if investors wake up to this idea that the Fed is wrong and that they're running you know, extreme monetary accommodation as if we are in the midst of a financial crisis or something, even as GDP is running 6-8% and inflation is running, you know, close to that high, that the Fed is woefully behind the curve and they're going to have to catch up relatively quickly. Step up the pace of the taper, start raising interest rates because inflation is already untethered.
Yeah, Jesse, that was one thing we've been pondering with different guests is if the Fed is forced to ramp up the amount of their taper and try to finish earlier so they can combat inflation by hiking rates, do you think that would have a detrimental effect on the general markets? And do you think that more people are finally starting to wake up, especially after this last hot reading in October of 6.2%? Do you think more generalists are starting to wake up for the fact that this is not transitory? There's so many elements of it, whether it's labor, rent, different food products. There's all kinds of components that have nothing to do with supply chain issues and are not base effect. Do you think that realization will cause any fluctuations in the general markets as well?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think, there's a couple of interesting things to kind of touch on there. First is, I look at one of the indicators I look at is just the ratio of precious metals to equities or financial assets. You can look at just gold to the gold to Dow ratio. And it's pretty clear that that's, stocks have dramatically outperformed gold prices during disinflationary environments and vice versa. And that's one of the primary factors that, I think behind that ratio. So if we are indeed entering in the early stages of a new kind of inflationary environment, then, investors are going to have to. And I think that's why the gold price is starting to wake up here again, is that after the Fed meeting, after the CPI report last week, investors are going, wait a second, what if the Fed's wrong? If the Fed's wrong, then, and they're running the printing presses at full speed, even while the economy is running hot and inflation is accelerating, then I literally can't own enough gold in this environment. None of us do. And so I think that's why gold is starting to pick up. If inflation continues to head this way, yeah, gold could scream higher. I've said, I think, for the last couple of months, talking with you guys, gold's going to test its highs, from last year and probably break out over the next sometime next year as a result of this inflation proving non-transitory and the Fed being so far behind the curve. Now, the other side of this is if the Fed does have to start tapering relatively quickly. In the past, or the past decade or so, when the Fed has tapered, we've seen actually interest rates go down. And I think that was more of a product of, the Fed providing less accommodation means the economy is going to slow, which means interest rates should come down. But today, I think we're in a situation where the Treasury market really can't function effectively without the Fed's support. And so removing that support, I think we'll probably see something different. I think Financial Times has highlighted this recently, that liquidity in the Treasury market has dropped dramatically. And, that's a byproduct of a lot of, regulatory actions, but also the Fed has become by far and away the biggest player in the market. And if they start to step away and remove that price insensitive demand for treasuries, then, we could see the long end, especially really start to rise, interest rates go up, which would really be potentially damaging to long duration assets, which to me, the bullseye would be on, growth stocks in the stock market, the biggest stocks in the market, those big stocks in the NASDAQ.
So Jesse, regarding your comment on gold coming into a more positive light for investors, it's not just gold moving higher though. It is U.S. markets. It's a wide range of financial assets moving higher. And I guess to the point of inflation being at 30-year highs, why isn't gold at 30-year highs? Why has there been such a big lag, I guess we can call it, for the gold price compared to where inflation is currently?
Well, negative real interest rates are usually very, very bullish for gold prices. There's been a big, dramatic divergence between the two. You see, look at TIPS, just this kind of shorthand for real rates. Look at TIPS pushing to new highs. That to me tells me that gold is significantly undervalued, should be also pushing to new highs. But what's happened is with the Fed suppressing interest rates so dramatically, like I said, running extreme, accommodative policy, even in the midst of this, one of the strongest economic recoveries we've seen in history, is it's really pushed risk appetites in the markets to, you know, mania proportions. We've seen, you know, what would normally push people into gold is pushing people into cryptocurrencies, into profitless tech stocks, into SPACs, into all of these, you know, the craziest high risk things in the market. And so I think that does help explain why gold hasn't benefited. You look at other things, look at, you know, high dividend stocks in the market. I mean, there are stocks that are paying, you know, close to double digit dividend yields, and investors are, you know, literally leaving them for dead because they would prefer to own, you know, Lucid Motors, which, you know, literally doesn't have any revenues, but is worth more than Ford Motors today. So, you know, these profitless companies are the ones people are speculating in. But if interest rates start ticking back up, the Fed starts having to taper, you know, then those risk appetites, and I think we're already seeing signs of a potential weakening in risk appetites. Probably the activity in call options is another one to watch, where we saw last week, I think it was, call option activity just scream higher. Tesla gained $400 billion in a month in market cap. So, yeah, the Fed, this extreme accommodative policy has really lit a fire under risk appetites. And, you know, that's something I'm paying really close attention to, because as a potential reversal of that, with the removal of Fed accommodation, a shift in risk appetites could be a very big deal for a number of markets.
Yeah, Jesse, I was looking over one of the articles you put out titled "The Fasten Seatbelt Sign Just Lit Up," and you were getting into some of the Hindenburg omens and how they're not always a perfect signal, but when you see a lot of them strung together like we have at different periods, it sometimes shows the divergence between the new highs and the new lows in the markets. Maybe speak to that and how that could signal a possible topping to the end of the speculative fervor that we've seen the last year and a half.
Yeah, well, I think it's really interesting that we're seeing the Fed begin to remove accommodative policy, even if they're doing it at a snail's pace. And we're seeing these breath warnings in the NASDAQ creep up to a level that has almost always resulted in at least a significant correction, if not an outright bear market. You mentioned the Hindenburg omens on the NASDAQ. Essentially, Hindenburg omen is triggered when the index itself is at or near a new high, and the number of 52-week new highs and new lows crosses above a threshold. It's something like 2%, 2.5%, something like that. So you shouldn't expect to see new highs hit, you know, within the index, kind of rise during an uptrend and kind of sustained at a higher level. That's a sign of a healthy market. But when you see a number of new lows when the index start creeping up, that's a sign that there's dispersion under the surface. There's not the majority of stocks are no longer pushing the market higher. We're seeing a number of stocks roll over into individual bear markets of themselves. When you see enough of these signals over a period of time, it can be an important warning for the market. So over the past year, so far in 2021, we've seen 14 Hindenburg omens triggered in the NASDAQ. You know, Monday was 13, Tuesday was 14. Today, I don't think we'll have enough new highs in the index to trigger the 15th, but every time we've hit 13, it's like I said, we hit March 2000, we hit 13 Hindenburg omens right before the market rolled over in a bear market. October of 2007 was the next time, right before the financial crisis. July of 2015, we saw 13 Hindenburg omens trigger again right before the mini crash in August of 2015. And then into early 2016, we had another major correction. Right before Volmageddon in 2018, we had another one. And then again in the fall of 2018, before that steep fourth quarter sell-off, we saw this 13 Hindenburg omens again. And then in January of 2020, right before the COVID crash, the NASDAQ hit 13 Hindenburg omens during this 12-month look-back period again. And obviously stocks got crushed into February, March of that year. So to me, this is a very clear signal that the dispersion under the surface has reached a level that, you know, it warrants, you know, some concern on the part of investors. It's enough to signal that the uptrend in the NASDAQ is dramatically weakened.
So, Jesse, real quick, back to inflation, too. We keep on hearing all this about supply chain issues, but everyone seems to be ignoring the fact that everybody, whether it's businesses, the whole way down to mom and pop on the street, seem to be spending money. We finally have seen businesses reinvesting in their businesses and also rising wages. This is a trend that we haven't seen over the last decade. We were always blaming the corporations for not reinvesting, not spurring growth. Now they're doing that. Plus, they have the support of consumers openly spending. How much more liquidity is there in your eyes for businesses and individuals to keep pumping this demand side?
Well, I think most people have totally underestimated the amount of just dry powder out there to spur continued demand on the part of consumers and businesses alike. Corporations have borrowed record amounts of money, you know, and they've been hugely incentivized to do so with the Fed lowering interest rates to record lows, using the quantitative easing to push the entire yield curve down to, you know, rates we've really never seen, you know, or at least for a long time. You know, and at the same time, all the money that we sent to consumers during the pandemic, they used, and we're still sending through, you know, child tax credits and things, they used to pay down debt. At least during the pandemic, because they didn't have any way to go spend it. So they paid down debt. Credit card debt came way down. And so that allowed, that essentially left tons of available credit for consumers to use. We're seeing that now. So retail sales number that came out today is so far above the pre-pandemic trend. It's ridiculous. So to say that this is just a supply problem that's causing inflation is disingenuous at best, and probably intentionally misleading. Like we were talking before we started recording, Bridgewater put out a great piece last week showing that demand is as much to do, if not more than supply, in terms of the inflation dynamics. And, you know, that's not just consumers, like you mentioned, it's businesses, which have borrowed tons of money, put tons of cash on the balance sheet. And with record profit margins today, they have a huge incentive to go out and spend and to try and rectify these supply chain issues, because the more they can fix and the more inventory they can build up, the more they can sell at these record profits. And so they, you know, it's just a huge incentive for them to do that. At the same time, the banks have now $4 trillion of, you know, reserves on the balance sheet to go lend out, that they're just, you know, desperate to lend out. So to consumers, to small businesses, to whatever. And so, you know, there's so much demand out there and potential demand in the future that the Fed really needs to start reducing a lot of the stimulus, because really they say, well, we can't fix supply chain issues, but yes, you can affect demand. If you go start raising interest rates, that's going to limit demand and slow the economy down. But as we've discussed before, the reason they're not doing that is because if they do it too quickly, with asset price valuations at extremes, they risk crashing the markets. And so they're going to err to the side of allowing inflation to run hot as long as they can. And then they will only rein in these policies, to the extent that they do not threaten the asset markets.
Well, just Jesse, as we wrap up, the, you know, with the backdrop that we have with inflation running hotter and appearing to be more transitory, with this huge demand push from the marketplace, not just from retail consumption, but also from businesses, and rising wages and a shortage in labor, and all of this kind of feeding into this Fed policy next year where they're going to have to finish up their tapering and start hiking rates, what do you think the cumulative effect will be when they do finally start hiking these rates? Will that be an end of the party, and will that tamper down some of this wild speculation and spending and demand, or will it just fuel things higher?
I think probably the first stage is it will start to rein in some of the risk taking. Risk appetites will be affected first. I mean, that seems to me the most direct correlation that, you know, the Fed has is the ability to affect risk appetites in the markets. I mean, that's where they're operating. But I do think people will, investors especially, will start to freak out if they see the Fed tapering and even potentially raising interest rates and it not affecting inflation. The Fed is so far behind the curve right now. Bill Dudley, former head of the New York Fed, wrote about this recently. He said, you know, if inflation is at 3%, the neutral rate is 3-4%. So inflation is at 6% today. So the neutral Fed funds rate is 6-7%. Now, there's a bunch of different ways to estimate where the real Fed funds rate is today. You could just take 0%, you know, and subtract, you know, inflation and say it's at negative, you know, negative six is the real Fed funds rate right now. Some estimates I've seen are negative 10% with the amount of QE quantitative easing. The shadow Fed funds rate puts it at around negative 2%. But if the Fed funds rate should be 6-7 just to be neutral, and then be hawkish, you have to be 7-9% today, currently, in order to be hawkish. The Fed has probably never been so far behind the curve. So the Fed could start tightening and inflation still start going up. As soon as investors realize this, that they have so much work to do to really address inflation and that they're so far behind the curve, there's going to be a paradigm shift in markets where people are, like I said, going to realize that none of us own enough gold. That the Fed, you know, can't rein in inflation without crashing the markets, and they're not willing to do that. And so inflation has already run away from them, and they don't have the will or the ability to do anything about it. And so you really have to find those assets in the market that are going to protect you from that. And you have to avoid those assets that are dramatically overpriced that are interest rate sensitive, because at some point, the currency market, the bond market is really going to test the Fed. There, you know, there could be people, you know, start abandoning treasuries, realizing that, wait a second, I'm getting 2% on my 30-year. Inflation's running 6. You know, interest rates could really start, you know, ticking up significantly at the long end. And the dollar, you know, has been really strong lately. It's impressive to see gold do so well in the face of a strong dollar. But if the currency rolls over, that's going to be also a big, you know, test for the Fed's resolve. So I think we're heading for these kinds of tests, and the markets, there's a variety of markets that are going to be repricing, you know, because of this paradigm shift in inflation, and people should prepare themselves as best they can for it.
All right, Jesse, we're going to wrap it up here. Interesting comments as always, and I know we'll be following up with you next month and into 2022 to just see if this loss of confidence is picking up steam and, well, where that money is rotating, which sectors are starting to outperform. Jesse, great chatting with you as always. Again, Jesse is the founder and editor of the Felder Report. Jesse, I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks, Corey. Hope you guys have a good weekend, too.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.